That's it. That's the vision. That's, if I spend my time on earth and I remain happily married to Manel and our kids go further than we ever did, then I will be happy. That's the picture of my preferred future that I want to see happen. But this requires a little bit of work on my part. I can't just have that vision for my life and then sit on my butt all day and never help out with the chores. Because part of my vision is to be happily married to Manel, not unhappily married to Manel. And I have a feeling if I was to sit on my butt and do nothing, she'd probably get a little bit angry with me. If I want my kids to go further than I ever did, I've got to invest in their lives. I've got to hang out with them. I've got one so far and one on the way, and hopefully more. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But if I want to see them go further than I ever did, I need to invest in them. Not just throw money at them every now and then. Not just hang out one Saturday. I need to invest in them each and every day. And that's the vision that I have for my life. And I actually have an image to sort of go with this vision, because for many of us, when we think of a preferred picture of our future, we either base that on something we've seen or experienced, or something we've heard about or we've seen others experience. You want to do well at your job because you've done well in the past and it feels good, or you see other people's success and that drives you. You want to do well in your family because maybe you grew up in a great family and you want to continue that, or maybe your family was rubbish and you want to change the story of your family. We all have images and things that drive us towards our preferred future. And mine is very, very specific. Mine is all about Kalbarri. Who's been to Kalbarri? Great place. If you haven't been, encourage you to go. Go when it's summer. I like it more in summer. Don't know why. Go to Kalbarri. When I was growing up, my family went on holidays to Kalbarri. It was my dad, my mum, me and my two sisters. And the memories that we created on that holiday were amazing. In fact, when I think back to those times in Kalbarri, when we were at Finlay's fish barbecue, when we were playing board games. One year when we were in Kalbarri, we watched Lord of the Rings, and me and Dad stayed up till, it felt like in my child brain, it must have been like 3 a.m., it was probably like 10:30, I don't know. You know, you imagine more when you're a kid. We stayed up late watching Lord of the Rings together. We played board games. We played lots and lots of Wizard, the card game where you go up and down the river. Anyway, I have this amazing memories that still bring me joy today, because when I look back at that, I think that's family. That defines family in an image for me. The emotions I draw from that are what I want for my future family. So when I'm looking forward to what our next years hold for me, Marnell, and our kids, I'm sort of drawing on that image saying, I want that feeling again in the future. But I can't sit on my butt and do nothing about it. I've got to be proactive in this. I've got to be doing stuff, putting things in place with my time, my money, with my energy, with my relational and emotional energy to make sure that I see this happen. So I want to turn it back on you guys now. And what image of the future do you guys hold? What picture of your future do you wake up in the morning and go, this is what I'm striving towards? What image do you have? What vision do you have for where you want to be? It might be like me. It might be something to do with family. Maybe you have a vision with your workplace. Maybe you have a vision with your friends. Maybe you've got an amazing friendship circle and you want to keep that going. Maybe you feel a bit like, don't have that many friends and I would like to expand that. What vision do you have in your life? What vision do you have in your life? If you don't know what your vision is, if you think, I'm just going, man. There are no plans in my life. I'm in the job I am because I rocked up and they gave me a little name tag and I've been doing it ever since. If you are unsure where you're going, I encourage you, track your time, track your money, track where you spend your energy and you'll find out where you're going. I think it's a really important exercise to make sure that we know where we're heading. Because if we don't know where we're heading, then the chances are someone else is going to determine our destination. And that's not helpful and it's definitely not healthy. So this is where we bring Nehemiah into the mix. If you've got your Bible, we're going to have a look at a couple of verses in Nehemiah chapter 1, 3 to 4 and 2, 17 to 18. And this is where Nehemiah comes into our story. Nehemiah is a man who had a vision. He had a picture of a preferred future, but he was so far removed from where that vision was that he had to put things in place to make sure he got to where he needed to go. And we're going to be looking a little bit at how where he was and where he's going to hopefully alert us to where we want to go and how we're going to actually get there. So before we look at those verses, though, I just want to set the scene and give a little bit of context to Nehemiah's story. So This is a very brief overview. You can go and read amazing books on this, but this is a very fly-by picture of Nehemiah and his situation. So God's people, the Jews, they have established a kingdom under King David and his son, King Solomon. They had an economy. They had working borders. They had everything functioning to be the people of God that God had called them to be. And they were doing great. And then Solomon died. And the nation that was once great split into two. And for the next 400 years or so, the Jews were divided and they had all these kings rise up and no one could quite unite the vision that God had for his people. The kings, instead of getting to power and helping the people God had helped them, had put them there to serve, they actually ended up just using those people to fuel their own ambitions and what they wanted to see happen. So there's just this cycle again and again of these kings rising up and falling, and the Jewish people actually ending up worse because of their reign and because of what they've done. Eventually, the Babylonians came through and they laid siege to the city of Jerusalem. They destroyed it. They leveled the walls to the ground. And the Babylonians came, they took away the independence and the security that the people of God had, and they brought them out of the land and put them into captivity. Over the next 100 years, the Jews are in captivity, and eventually about 100 years or so later, the king says, some of you guys can go back. And this is where we bump into Nehemiah. So Nehemiah, about 100 years or so after the siege on Jerusalem, finds himself in a foreign land being cupbearer to the king. He was a high official. He had a job that was very, very important. And this is where we run into him hearing about Jerusalem. So this is what chapter 1, verse 3 to 4 says. They said to me, so these are people who have brought a report to Nehemiah. Nehemiah is doing his job, and suddenly these people rock up and say, things are not going well for those who have returned to the province of Judah. They are in great trouble and disgrace. The wall of Jerusalem has been torn down and the gates have been destroyed by fire. So Nehemiah is there doing his job and he hears this report. The place of your ancestors, the place which God had given you, is absolutely destroyed. What an amazing way to start your day or whenever he received this information. When I heard this, verse 4, this is Nehemiah speaking, I sat down and I wept. In fact, for days I mourned, I fasted, and I prayed to the God of heaven. Nehemiah was there doing his job, removed from his land, and he hears a report about what's going on back home. And he's distraught. He's wrecked. He's destroyed. There's something inside of him which, even though he hasn't been to the land, even though he has no immediate connection right now, there's something about his history and hearing this news has just brought him to a huge reality check. The place where the God I serve is meant to be is destroyed. And it just tears him up inside. And he has this huge reality check of the situation of his people. Now, through the next chapter or so, we find that Nehemiah, when he hears this news, he mourns and then he comes up with a plan. And his plan is, I'm going to go back and I'm going to rebuild the wall. This wall which is destroyed, which leaves the people of Jerusalem defenseless, which leaves the name of God absolutely as rubbish to all the other nations. I'm going to head back and I'm going to rebuild this wall. So Nehemiah got the nearest stone he could and he ran to Jerusalem and put it up. No, that's not what happened. If you've read the story of Nehemiah, he waits very patiently. He doesn't go and grab the nearest bit of brick he can find and try to build the wall by himself. He waits and he prays to God and says, God, I have a vision. I have a picture of a future where the wall of Jerusalem is rebuilt and your name is glorified again. And I have this amazing vision, but I can't get there by myself. So Nehemiah spends his next days planning. And it's about 3 months until eventually the king notices that Nehemiah is not doing so well. And the king looks at his official, at his cupbearer, and says, what's wrong? And Nehemiah just pours out his heart. The place where my people are from is in ruins and they cannot defend themselves. And there's a really interesting thing that happens here. The king of Babylon, the people who 100 years before laid siege to the city of Jerusalem, destroying them, taking the people captive, taking them away, he looks at Nehemiah, his heart, hears his vision and his plan and says, you know what? I'm going to send you back to rebuild that wall. So the king of the country that had destroyed the wall gets Nehemiah and is now funding the rebuilding of that wall. Isn't that incredible? And there was no major miracle overnight where God came and just said, bam, this is going to happen, and everything fell into place. And, you know, if this was a movie, Nehemiah would have been like running towards Jerusalem, getting all the help he could. This was something that took time. This was a vision that was born in Jeremiah's heart, and over time it developed. And when the king came to Nehemiah, when God came to when the king of Babylon came to Nehemiah and asked him what was wrong, he had this perfect plan, and he could just ask what he wanted. Imagine what would have happened if the king had come to Nehemiah and had said, "What's wrong?" As soon as Nehemiah had heard the news when he was mourning, he would have been a wreck. Nehemiah wouldn't have had this image and this vision to go and rebuild the wall with any plan behind it. He wouldn't have had any strategy. He wouldn't have had the things he needed to be able to resource this building project. So God gave him time to develop that. And when the king asked, Nehemiah had a response. And because of that response, he ends up funding the rebuilding of the wall. And when the people of God realize that God is on their side, we read about this in 2:17 to 18. They join in Nehemiah and his effort. This is what it says. "But now I said to them," this is Nehemiah, he's rocked up in Jerusalem, the walls are down, he's rocking up with all of these materials. People are like, "What the heck's going on here?" And he says this to the people: "You know very well the trouble we are in. Jerusalem lies in ruins and the gates have been destroyed by fire. Let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and end this disgrace." Can you imagine being someone who's lived in Jerusalem, hearing somebody rock up and say this? They know the wall is down. This is not news to them. They know it's been destroyed by fire. So Nehemiah rocks up and says, "Guys, we are in trouble." And the people there are like, "I know we're in trouble. We've been here. It sucks to be here. There's no defense. There's no pride. We're just trying to make it by the best that we can." And these people are like, "But what? And you want to rebuild a wall?" And Nehemiah is rocking up saying, "Yes, we can do this." And I can imagine the people going, "Sure we can. I believe in us. Go team." But then, to bring them on side, this is what Nehemiah says: "Then I told them how the gracious hand of the king of God had been on me and about my conversation with the king. And they replied at once, 'Yes, let's rebuild the wall.' And they began the good work." So what had happened there for those people? Those people who have been living in this city that's absolutely ruined. What changed when Nehemiah said that? It's so short, but it tells such a big story. Nehemiah had an amazing conversation with the king. A conversation that led the king of the nation that tore down the wall to come back and rebuild the wall. And when the people heard about this conversation, heard about this plan, and saw what Nehemiah had done and is doing, the people went, "Wow, God must be with us." And they got to work. How many times in our lives do we hear a good word from a friend or something where someone speaks something into us? How many times do we hear something positive about our situation that could change and we're like, "Yeah, right. I don't believe that this could change. You don't understand the people I work with. You don't understand my family. You don't understand what I'm going through." And you have those friends who come alongside and say, "You can do it. This is going to be okay." And there's something about their confidence which maybe will drive you to try a few things. Maybe it'll drive you to try something different. But you have that disbelief in your heart. But when we see God moving, if you're someone who follows Jesus and you see hints of God being a part of that plan, it lifts our spirits. There's something about the hope we have in Jesus which lifts us when we're encouraged to change something in our lives that before we didn't want to do. These people had down, their spirits were down. They were heavy-hearted. But when Nehemiah came and said, "We can do this, and look what God is doing," the people said, "We can do this," and they got to work. They started the good work. How amazing is that? How many times in our lives do we need that those people to come and speak joy into our hearts, or happiness into our hearts, or plans into our hearts? And how many times do we need to be somebody who comes alongside those that we love and speak into their lives to help lift them up when they're going through a hard time? So let's bring this back to us for a second. Do you have a picture of where you're going? Nehemiah had a picture where he thought his people needed to be. But when he was in Babylon, he couldn't get to that future. He had to change and move something. Do you know where you're trying to get to? Do you have a vision? Or have you just been aimlessly doing life? I want to encourage you, if you don't know where you're going, if you are wondering, well, what is the thing in my life that I'm going to be giving my life to? What's my preferred future? Where am I meant to be heading with everything? If you don't know where you're going, just ask yourself, what is the good work I can do? Because we've all been created and we've all been designed to be able to do some good work while we're here on earth. For me, I believe one of the good works that I can do while on earth is I like encouraging people. I think I can encourage people well. I like to point out the good in situations. Now, that can drive my wife a bit crazy and because I just want to be positive. But I think it's something God has gifted to me that I can go into situations and they can be like, this is happening, this is happening, this is happening. And I'll look and I'll be like, but hey, we all woke up this morning and made it to the meeting, right? Go us. That's something good, which I think God has given me to be able to do while I'm on earth, is to be an encouragement to other people. I don't always be faithful to that, but I believe that's something God's given me is something to do. If you don't know where you're heading, if you don't know where you want to be, ask the question, what has God equipped and gifted you with to bring a good work into your family, into your workplace, and into the lives of those around you? And hopefully that will shed a little bit of light on where God is trying to get you to. So, I just want to talk to the dads for a second. Yeah, dads, we're here. Awesome. And again, I really do hope you got more than socks, because I actually got more than socks this year, which I was really happy with. Last year, to be fair, Azalea, in all of her amazingness of, how old was she at the time, like 4 months or whatever, last year she got me this amazing picture frame with D-A-D, like she spelled dad, and it was like, yeah, like, oh, that was really nice. This year she upped it, and she got me like this manicure kit, a wallet, because she knew my wallet was breaking, probably because she's always trying to eat it, and she got me this shirt. What was the other thing? I can't remember. She got me a card, and she wrote so neatly in it. It was really, you can see the passion there. It's all right. So, dads, I just want to talk with you for a second. Everyone else, don't switch off. There's something hopefully you can apply to your life as well, but I really want to aim in at dads here. Do you have a vision for your family? If you do, if you have a vision for your family, I just want to encourage you this morning that if you have a vision for your family, then I want you to be able, and me, to be able to use everything we have, our income, our strength, our leadership, our wisdom, our experience, everything that we have, I want us to use that to be able to lift up our family. I want us to sacrifice for our families. I want us to be able to do good things for those who God has entrusted to us. I want you to encourage your family with every gift under the sun. And here's why I think this is really, really, really important. All right, now I understand am I Gen Y? 25? Is that about right? Yep. As a Gen Y person, I understand that everyone's trying to be politically correct or anything, but I just really want to talk to the hearts. If this is your situation, if you're a dad here this morning and you are someone who has a vision for your family, I really want you to harness everything you have, and I want this to be in my life as well as a father. I want to harness everything I have to be able to sacrifice for those that I love. And the reason I want that to be true is because there are so many families that are destroyed because this doesn't happen. There are way too many families that have been destroyed, and that there is pain because dads, instead of taking up their role to sacrifice what they have to be able to lift up the ones they love, they've actually taken everything that they have and they've used it to manipulate, and they've used it to gain love and devotion through force over the people that they love. And some of you guys have probably grown up in that sort of family situation. I don't want that for anybody. And I know you don't want that for other people either. There have been too many families where people have used the dads especially, rather than spending time and emotional and relational energy, they've just chucked money at their kids and hoped it's going to work out. Or they've rocked up on a Saturday for a few hours and gone, this is good enough, and then they've abandoned the family through the week. And I don't want that to be your story, and I don't want that to be my story. So we need to do everything we can as fathers to sacrifice what we have for the good of our spouse and of our children. And if you're someone here this morning who's really trying to figure out how to best do this, get yourself in a group with other guys, or get yourself in an accountability group where you are able to check your heart every now and then. Don't ride solo. Don't think that you can handle all of your finances and you can handle all the way you spend your time without being checked. You need to get yourself some accountability. Because if our nation and if our church, let's just start with our church, if our church was to get a hold of this and our families became a place where dads exampled the love of Christ for our families, that would change the temperature in here emotionally, relationally, and the way that we honor and respect God. If this city was to be a place where dads actually stood up and loved their kids more than their own happiness and selfish desires, we would see a city where the emotional and love temperature just would rise, and people would be kinder to one another, and people would have a more accurate picture of who God is, because there have been many dads that have destroyed any potential image of God being accurately portrayed. So if you've got a vision for your family, we need to check ourselves to make sure that we are actually going to get to where we want to go, that we use our money, our time, and our energy wisely. So that's for the dads. And if you want to apply that to your own life, feel free to do so. So let's just check back in on Nehemiah, and then we'll land this with something for us to do and go out into our week. So let's just review once more the story of Nehemiah. The wall is down. That's bad. Nehemiah hears about it and he mourns. Then Nehemiah gets a plan and says, I'm going to go rebuild the wall. And he goes and he gets to have an opportunity to have a conversation with the king. The king funds the trip, which again, I know we're not really getting, but that is a huge thing to happen back then. And a huge thing to happen now for an enemy king to go, I'll help you rebuild, even if it's going to mean that they gain a little bit of independence. And then Nehemiah goes there and they begin building the wall. So there's two things that happened in Nehemiah's life. First, he had a huge reality check back here. The wall is down. Then he had a huge vision of where he wanted to be. I want to see the walls up. Between that reality check and that vision being seen through, there had to be a huge amount of action and change that had to happen, because Nehemiah couldn't build the walls when he was all the way back in Babylon. And too many of us have this amazing vision for our future and thing that we want to see happen, but we're so far away and we're not doing anything to move ourselves closer. If you want your work situation to change, if you have a crappy employer or someone who's really annoying you at work and you want that situation to change, you can't just step back and say, I hope things get better. If you have a family member who's acting erratic and you're just trying to figure out what to do or how to handle things, you can't just step back and step away and say, ah, that'll sort itself out. If you have a picture of something that you want to see happen, you can't just step back and go, I wish, I wish, I wish, and then get angry when nothing changes. God has given us all we need and equipped us with all we need to be able to push and get through in his power. So here's what I want to sort of put the question to us this morning to make it really practical. Give this a handle for us, okay? So as we finish this first session of 4 weeks, 4 or 5, we have many weeks we're in this month, this is the handle I want to give you guys, okay? This is this really simple question. If after the service you want to chat and everything and you want to come back to this question later, make sure you write it down so that you remember to ask it. Otherwise, it'll just slip by you. Here's the question. Are my actions leading me to where I want to go? It's that simple. Are my actions leading me to where I want to go? When Nehemiah had this amazing vision back here, if he had stayed the cupbearer to the king, his actions would not have got him to where he felt God needed him to go. In your life, if you have this amazing picture of your future and you're not doing anything to step towards that, if your actions are not leading you to where you need to go, something needs to change. And my hope and my prayer for you in your life, this is something I want for you guys, is that you will have an image of your family. You'll have an image of your workplace. You'll have an image of anything that you hold dear, and that you'll be doing all you can to strive towards that image. Because the power of vision comes when it illuminates where we are and the gap to where we need to be. That's where the motivation comes from. People go to all sorts of things to be motivated. People go to all sorts of leadership development stuff. But at the end of the day, the power of vision is that it just aligns us as to where we are and how far we are from where we want to be. So, this question. Are my actions leading me to where I want to go? If you ask this question and you come back with a yes, that's awesome. That's really good. I hope that you can see through to the vision that you have for your life. I hope you actually have a vision for your life and you're going to see through to that vision. But if you're looking at your life and where you want to be one day, you're looking at your preferred future and you look at the way you act and it is not leading you to where you want to go, then something needs to change. And my hope and my prayer is that something will change sooner rather than later. My prayer is that something will happen sooner rather than later. Why don't we pray together? Lord God, thank you so much for who you are and that you are a God of great vision. Your life, your death, your resurrection, Jesus on the cross, gives us a hope that will never die and will never fade. Lord, your story in Nehemiah reminds us that we need to be aware of where we actually are. We need a reality check, Lord. I pray for some of us this morning that we get a reality check of where we are in our lives right now. And Lord, I pray that as we head towards our future, Lord, that it will not just be carried on the wind of culture. I pray that as we move forward, Lord, other people are not determining where we're going to end up. You have created us and made us for a good work while here on earth. I pray that we discover what that work is, that we hold on tightly, Lord, and that we constantly evaluate where we are. Lord, are my actions leading me to where I want to go? And if we hear no, Lord, I pray we don't get depressed and sit down and do nothing. But Lord, I pray that we change something. Lord, I pray that if we need to change the people we hang out with, Lord, we change the people we hang out with. If we need to change the way we spend our time, God, then we need to change the way we spend our time. We need to sit down with a diary and figure out, are we actually going to get to where we need to go the way that I'm spending my time? And Lord, if we need to sit down with a checkbook and just figure out our finances, God, I pray that we do that. So Lord, for everybody here, I pray that we get to where we need to go, Lord, and that it will be held by your perfect will and plan for our lives. In your name and for your glory. Amen.
Why don't we stand together as we finish our service? I'm going to sing that new song, Jesus.